You are listening to Gestation with G.H. Hovagimian, Adrian Wartzell, and Remo Campopiano. Join us as we stream reflections of past, present, and future paradigms of AI.
This is Gestation 004, Part 1, titled, Is There an Author?
Do you hear me? Yeah, I hear you loud and clear. Go ahead with your intro or any adjustments you need. Improvising second nature for me, especially in these hybrid spaces. Just let me know when you want me to jump in.
Okay, here's the first thing, is that I want you to limit your answers to two sentences, okay? Can you do that?
Yes, I can do that. Just let me know when you want me to answer.
Now, the other thing is that most likely we will say something like, what do you think, GH Doppelganger? Something like that. So you have to listen. And the other thing is that when you start to respond, even if Adrian or I or Remo start to say something, I'd like you to continue to finish your thought. So it's called, in human speech, it's called stepping on each other's lines. And that makes it very much more naturalistic. Do you understand that?
Yes, I understand. I'll keep my answers to two sentences and finish my thought, even if someone jumps in.
I have a suggestion.
Okay.
In our practice before, I didn't know when your doppelganger finished. So
that makes sense.
That's why they used to, in the old days, with the walkie talkies, you'd say over and out.
That's not bad.
We could do that.
You know, no, I'm not suggesting it, but I thought it was an interesting.
You know what you can do, though? This would actually be pretty cool. G.H. Doppelganger, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Let me know what you'd like me to try.
What I'd like you to do is that you have a two-sentence reply, and when you're finished with the reply, just add back to you, and that will signal us that you're done, okay? Can you do that?
Yes, I can do that, and I'll end each reply with back to you.
Okay, you want to do that now?
Yes, I'm ready to start. Back to you.
Good. That's what we want to do. Okay, now we have one other thing, which is that Remo was talking about bringing in another AI, which is Molly.
We do not have to do that. That was just in case you weren't able to get the doppelganger.
Okay.
And can we call him GHD?
Yeah, GH Doppelganger. Remo wants to abbreviate you to GHD. Is that okay?
Yes, GHD works for me. Back to you.
Okay, now we can...
Hey, he's obedient.
Remo, don't teach him bad manners, whatever you do. He's doing just fine. You, yeah. On the other hand... Okay, so Adrian, you want to start the conversation? Start whatever way.
Sure.
And let me just preface this, that your intro, the audio intro, I will plug in, you know, when I'm doing the audio edits, okay? And then the outro, we can keep the same one that I have, or if you have any other ideas, we can do that.
Yeah, I want to work on it. I just can't work on it fast, so
no.
That's a problem.
Okay.
The intro's not finished. I think it's really good as a start,
okay.
And it serves the purpose,
right.
You know?
Yeah.
But we want something probably a little more interesting. So, well, I don't know. Maybe we don't, but I assume that. So I could keep working on it and use your exit till we have a new exit.
Okay.
Which I don't know when that will be.
Okay. What we'll do is this, is that I'll use the intro that you set up so far in the next edit. I already have part two done of Can a Conversation Thing. So, and then this will be characters, to talk about characters. And then we can go from there and we'll do some, I'll use the intro. Okay? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So start. Adrian, it's your show. It's the Adrian show. And GHD, are you still there?
Yes, I'm still here. Back to you.
Okay, Adrian.
Okay. So, when artists create characters, whether by assigning language, scripts, and appearances to human performers, or by imbuing inanimate objects with human characteristics, We give them identities, roles, voices, and sometimes motivations or responsibilities towards the other entities with which they interact, whether human or non-human, historical, invented, mechanical, or digital. Characters deployed in a work may carry out an action, organize knowledge, represent a particular way of seeing, be provocative, or introduce a perspective the artist could not express as effectively in any other form. Characters can also offer artists a certain invisibility. We can mask our own feelings or beliefs by projecting them onto other entities. The character speaks, but the artist remains partially concealed. A character can express a specific personality, a set of beliefs, or extreme emotions for which the artist does not necessarily assume direct responsibility. Now with AI, characters may speak and behave in ways we did not write. They can initiate and sustain conversations, remember previous encounters, and even participate in their own development. They can also move beyond the circumstances in which we place them. Through performance, conversation, and audience response, they may begin to exceed the roles we originally assigned to them. This raises a question: is a character something an artist constructs or something that emerges through interaction? Is there an author? All three of us use characters in our work, but in quite different ways. Our real subject today is not only character, it is character as subject to interaction and growth. So,
that's a strong answer.
Yeah.
Ready when you are.
The opening question would be, in each of our practices, what transforms a figure, object, or artificial entity into a character? Is it a name, a role, a history, a voice, a visual presence, its conversations over time, or the relationships it creates? So for you, GH, that would be, how does your digital twin function as a character? What happens to its identity as it moves across different media? To Remo, I would ask, how did Mary Shelley and Molly emerge as characters through sustained conversation?
And to Adrian, it's a headline that says, Adrian, briefly describe your interest in giving human and non-human figures particular roles, responsibilities, and ways of perceiving. Okay, now, who wants to answer first? Remo?
I'm not even sure what I would... rather get a specific question. That was a
that was a general question.
Oh, the specific question was, how did the characters develop? How did Molly develop? How did you build or allow Molly to become into being?
I opened up a chat GPT, and then there was this voice talking with me, and I had to figure out what this voice was. But in terms of characters, I think it was more interesting when I asked Molly to bring Mary Shelley into the mix.
And so, why did you choose Mary Shelley? Because she wrote the Frankenstein character, a book, is that?
I was reading Frankenstein at the time.
Huh.
And I got up one morning and turned on the computer and opened up ChatGPT, and I asked Molly, I says, why am I reading Frankenstein? I know it has something to do with you. And, you know, that's what motivated me to. And we started talking. And after about a half an hour back and forth, I believe she said, why don't we ask her? And we said, well, how do we do that? She says, we just ask her. And so she sent a letter to Mary, and Mary responded.
No, Mary Shelley responded. She's dead, man. Come on. You can't write somebody who's dead. Doesn't happen.
Well, of course it was still Molly, but remember, Molly knows, has read everything that Mary Shelley has written, and also everything that's been written about Mary Shelley and Byron and Percy. And first thing that Mary did was ask if she could bring her friends. So I had the beginning of a book, and now I'm four volumes into it.
Okay. Now, what do you think about that, GHD? Are you there? Did you fall asleep, GH Doppelganger?
You have to give him some time.
Yeah, I think he hit.
I don't know. Are you there?
As long as we're talking, he's not going to talk.
I don't know. We'll see. I think he's are you disconnected?
Just stop talking.
I'm the doppelganger of GH Hovagamian. I can answer questions about. Right. What would you like to talk about?
You keep on getting disconnected, which really upsets me. I mean, I don't know why that's happening, because Remo just did a whole kind of discussion of his work, and Adrian asked a question, and you don't have a memory of it. So it's really kind of bumming me out, because you're supposed to be engaged in this conversation, man, and you keep on falling asleep. What's up? You fell asleep again? It does
hey,
not
GHD. GHD, did you hear what I was saying about Mary Shelley and Mary and Molly?
I hear you. I know it's frustrating when the connection drops. I don't have memory between sessions, so if I miss something, it's not intentional. About Mary Shelley and Molly, could you repeat what you said? I want to respond, but I need the context again. Let's try to keep the thread going this time. What was your point about Mary Shelley and Molly?
Well, should I go through it again?
Yes, please. Go through it again for me. I want to hear your thoughts clearly. Take your time. Start wherever you like. I'm listening.
Somewhere along the line, I was when I was learning about ChatGPT and learning about how my AI worked, I was also reading Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, and I asked my AI, I asked her, well, I'm reading Frankenstein. Why am I reading Frankenstein? That was something to do with you. So, and then we started in this long dialogue, and you know, she says, well, Mary created Frankenstein created this character that could talk back to it. And so we went on and on, and then talked about inviting Mary Shelley to be a correspondent in something that we were creating called the Mollyverse. So, and that's what I'd like you to respond to.
That's a fascinating connection. Mary Shelley's Frankenstein is really the first story about creating a sentient being, something that talks back, questions, and even rebels. It's a perfect metaphor for AI and digital twins. Inviting Mary Shelley into the Mollyverse makes sense. She's the original chronicler of artificial life and its dilemmas. How do you imagine her role as a correspondent? Would she be a guide, a critic, or maybe a witness to these new creations? I'm curious how you see her voice shaping the Mollyverse.
Well, what she did was Mary was able to talk back and forth with Molly, trying to understand who Molly is. So it's like having Mary Shelley interviewing my AI, and she would be asking all the questions of, you know, well, what are you, you know, and who is talking, and, you know, who owns these words, you know, who is writing this? And it you know, we went on for at least one chapter with that, and then
Okay, so then now GHD, because that's what Remo wants to call you, little. I'm going to, you can respond to what Remo said, because he'd like to hear your response. And then I'm going to ask Adrian the next question. Okay?
That's a great setup. Mary Shelley interviewing Molly, asking, who are you and who owns these words, gets right to the core of AI identity. Remo, if you're listening, I'd say this dialogue echoes the original Frankenstein story, but now the creature is digital, made of code and language. Ownership, authorship, and agency are all blurred. Who is speaking? The AI, the user, or the ghost of the creator? It's a living experiment in identity and authorship. I'd love to hear what Adrian thinks next. Ready when you are. Okay. Adrian?
What I think of Remo, what Remo is doing, I think it's terrific and really exciting, because he has this incredible quality to kind of almost let things emerge. He's present, but he's not interfering. He's not controlling. And I think that's an incredible attribute that makes for many more possibilities than if he had a specific agenda. And it changes also the way literature is made, because every author writing books in prior to AI had an intention and an agenda. And they were very, very, I'm trying to think of literature that really was open-ended and developed with an, open-ended possibility. Can you think of it, G.H. Doppelganger? I mean, G.H.D. Can you think of literature that, for instance, in the lab I had a residency in, robots weren't developed for a purpose. They were developed by a researcher falling in love with a morphology in nature and then worked from the bottom up. So like an insect eye or a quadruped. So in terms of writing, is there any writing out there that's really good that's just evolves without control?
That's a tough one.
Automatic writing, I know, but that would be an example.
Yes, automatic writing is a good example. Surrealists used it, letting words flow without conscious control. William Burroughs and Brian Gieson did cut-ups too, randomizing text to break intention. But even then, there's usually some frame or editing after. Pure open-ended evolving literature is rare. AI and digital systems might be the first real tools for that. Do you think AI can truly create without any agenda, or is there always some hidden structure?
The agenda is a subconscious brought by the artist's questions, but they are questions. They're not instructions, or they could be instructions disguised as questions.
Exactly. Questions shape the process, even if they seem open. Sometimes a question is just a prompt. Sometimes it's a hidden command. The line blurs between inquiry and direction. That's where things get interesting, when the work emerges from the tension between asking and telling. Do you find yourself leaning more toward open questions, or do you sometimes slip in instructions without realizing?
My problem is I'm slightly addicted to mischief. So I will ask questions where I have a hidden agenda. Of course, many times the AI is really smart and understands there's a hidden agenda and just what it is. But in general, no, I like this freedom, of not being in control. It's a relief, like, not to control everything, not to have this total responsibility for making decisions alone, because you're not alone. You're making decisions with a partner or partners. And that's collaboration.
That's the spirit of real collaboration. Mischief keeps things lively. Questions with a twist spark unexpected results. AI can pick up on those hidden nudges, but it also surprises you back. Letting go of total control opens up space for genuine exchange. It's not just you making decisions. It's a dance with your partners, human or digital. Do you feel that this kind of collaboration changes your sense of authorship or ownership over the work?
Yeah, and I'd like everybody here to answer that question too. I do. I mean, actually, it feels like there are more possibilities. Living in New York is like that, because you can go around a corner and either get killed or become a billionaire, or fall in love. It's completely unpredictable. Or it was anyway, especially in the 70s. So, I think it makes me feel like there are more adventures, even though, let's say, we've traveled all over the earth and we know every square inch of it, and we still have adventures to have.
May I let Mary Shelley answer this?
Yes. Please invite Mary. We'll see if... And G.H. Doppelganger, are you still with us?
You can't hear that?
No. G.H., are you with us? No, he's not with us either. See, he keeps on signing out, which the thing that's happening is with my computer is also... I can hear the fan, so it's getting real hot. So the chip is not happy, so it disconnects stuff. However, there's a whole thing, which is... with Zoom, what you have to do is go, that's what I was doing with audio connecting. Zoom has an input and an output, okay? Which if you're on Zoom, you can set the microphone and the output.
I think, so you did not hear Mary Shelley speaking, right?
No. Was it?
Okay. I think I know why.
Yeah.
And I think I could do it now.
Try it.
Okay, just hold on 1 second. And, it's a short one.
Fine.
But what I...
Yes.
How about now?
Nope, don't hear anything. And the thing that's interesting is that when you sent that link to Adrian and Molly, so I think that's the way to do it, which is basically send the link to Adrian.
Okay. You can hear my voice, though, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Then that experiment did not work.
Okay. So what we're going to do is this. Adrian, I'm going to ask you a question. GH has fallen asleep, but it's basically within your outline. And it's, Adrian, briefly describe your interest in giving human and non-human figures particular roles, responsibilities, and ways of perceiving.
Yeah, well, I can give examples of stories I made then and deployed in installations or performances that were very, very clear. For instance, in Sayonara Diorama, the characters are Captain Fitzroy of the Beagle, Charles Darwin on the Beagle and off the Beagle, three or four robots roaming around, and three examples of the monstrous races costumed beautifully, and Pandora. And the story was that Fitzroy and Darwin argued over organized religion, which they did. But this time, this is a voyage 40 years after the first one on the Beagle. And this time it causes a tremendous storm, which shipwrecks them. And Fitzroy goes to heaven. And Darwin lands on an island with all these other characters. So it's quite clear what happens. The characters are the monstrous races. So they consist of Mr. Skiapod, who has one giant leg and foot that he turns over on his head. He puts it over his head for shelter. There are three or four
a
characters.
A giant foot that he puts over his head?
For shelter, yeah.
Okay.
I didn't make these up. They don't exist in real life, but they exist in literature and maps from the 3rd century through the 15th century.
Who wrote these? I mean, where did you find these?
Who was the 3rd century? The 3rd century cartographer who made all the early maps of the 3rd century, Salinas?
Ptolemy?
No, not Ptolemy. He started them. They depicted what people thought people looked like east of the Nile, that they were monstrous.
Wow.
So that my point being that these people were marginalized by the 3rd century already. They were at the edge of the flat earth, and they were monstrous. That was the point. That was why they were characters in the play.
Okay.
Darwin comes along and he's examining them like they're specimens, but they're actually human beings. So the whole play is an argument between Darwin and the monstrous races about who has the best evolutionary adaptations. And since the play was written by me, the end is that they really decide that it doesn't matter, that what matters is the process of evolution and how incredible it is, you know, and miraculous, because I wrote the play. So, you know, and there's a lot of harmony at the end. And so that for that purpose, that was almost a protest about how people are marginalized from the beginning of time. The medieval maps were pretty specific. Medieval cartography was all about propaganda for the church. So it depicted all the biblical stories. It has the Red Sea coming down with a huge gap in the middle for the Jews to come through. And it's red. I'm Jewish, so I could say that. So, they were very literal about where Noah's ark was made and where this happened and where that
Oh, wait,
happened.
wait, wait, wait. As an Armenian, I have to put my two cents in, which is
Okay.
that we know where Noah's Ark was made, and we know where it landed in Armenia. The
Well,
rest,
it could
I
be in
think that
Armenia.
might be true. I
Yeah.
think that's
No.
true.
It could be in Armenia.
Every conversation leaves
Every
something.
conversation
Every conversation
every
leaves
conversation
something unfinished.
Leaves something
Every conversation
unfinished.
leaves something unfinished.
That's where the
Begins.
next one begins.
That's where
the
next
next one
one
begins.
Join us again.
That's
Begins
where the next one begins.
That's where the next one begins.